Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with us. If you've been listening already, thank you for that. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We got good stuff lined up for you straight ahead. William Kovacs is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Bill is with the U.S. Chamber. He's the Vice President of Environmental Technology and Regulatory Affairs at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he's our new friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Oh, it's great.
Bill, folks, as you know, in May, I was in D.C., where the U.S. Chamber's office is, looking right out over the Lafayette Park at the White House. I was there with them at their 2006 Access 2006 Small Business Summit, and as many of you may remember, I moderated a panel there for them, second time in a row, and had a great time. Bill, you guys had a great summit up there that time.
Oh, thank you. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, 97-98% of our members are small business. Everyone
right.
thinks of us as a large business organization, but really 98% of our members are small business. And what's great about us is the way dues are set, it's based on really your revenue. So you can have literally a mom-and-pop dry cleaner or grocer sitting next to the head of Exxon, and
right.
they both have the same vote.
Absolutely. And Bill, one of the things that that you work on is the energy policy for the chamber, which is also something that a lot of small businesses look to give them direction on the energy on what they should think about, how they should feel about, and how they should vote in a lot of ways on energy policy. The United States is a lot more efficient in terms of the energy that we use. One of the reasons why the gasoline increases, the prices of petroleum increase, hasn't hurt us any more than it has is because we use less of it per dollar of GDP. That having been said, however, we do use more than ever before, and we're increasingly dependent upon foreign oil. And that's not getting better, that's getting worse. What are we going to do about that?
Well, actually, a little bit of background on that one. In the mid 1970s, when we had the Arab oil embargo, which literally shut down the country, we were only importing about 30% of the oil, 34% of our oil. Today, we're importing almost 66%.
And it's going up.
And it's going up, and it's going to continue to go up. And the reason is, it's probably one of our primary policies, is the United States is the only nation in the world that actually restricts access to oil and gas exploration within its boundaries.
That's
the only nation in the world. And so right now we have a policy in the United States where you cannot drill anywhere on the East Coast or the West Coast or in half of the Gulf, and you can't, frankly, drill in large parts of Alaska. So when you look at it, 100% of our coastline is we are prohibited from drilling. We're prohibited from drilling in about 60% of the Gulf, and we're prohibited from drilling in most of Alaska. And to give you an idea of how much oil and gas is there, the outer continental shelf contains 420 trillion cubic feet of natural gas.
Wow.
And more than 85 billion barrels of oil. And to
wow.
give you an idea of how big 85 billion barrels of oil are, that's enough to replace all the oil that the United States currently imports from more than 37 countries. And those countries are Saudi Arabia, Iraq.
Are you serious?
Yes.
We could replace what we get from Saudi Arabia?
Yes. Everyone thinks we can't, that we're really dependent on it. They are only about 14% of our supply. And you know, we have a list. 37 countries. For a total, just to give you an idea of the value of it, for a total of $280 billion a year.
Who owns those reserves? Has anybody laid claim to those reserves yet?
The federal government.
The government owns those.
The government owns 100%.
So they haven't sold those. In other words, those aren't reserves that Shell or ExxonMobil or somebody like that has already laid claim to.
No.
And which the government could sell.
They could, and that's one of the that's really one of the big fights that's going on in Congress. Yesterday, the House of Representatives voted 232 to 187 to begin allowing those areas to be explored.
Right.
And what the compromise was, which we've been arguing for years, is that the states have said, well, we're very concerned that if you drill in our coastal waters, there's going to be a spill. Well, when Katrina hit, and it was one of the most devastating earthquakes or hurricanes ever, there was no spill of any oil and gas rig in the entire Gulf.
Yeah, we didn't
hear
one thing.
Now understand
about it.
That it's environmentally sound.
Absolutely. Well, 37 countries, folks. Think about that. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about this, and Bill's got a lot more information. I think some things that will raise your eyebrows a little bit. We're going to talk about that right after these messages. We'll be right back. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for checking it out and using it. You've been using it like crazy this month. Thank you for that. I'm really glad to see that you're using our site and taking advantage of all the things that we do there that we make available to you for free. Thank you so much to our Brain Trust members, like our newest Brain Trust member, Bill Kovacs with the U.S. Chamber. Many of his compadres over there at the Chamber are part of our Brain Trust. Giovanni Cortolo and a number of others over there at the Chamber. Bill, folks, we're talking about the U.S. energy policy and how the way it's structured is actually hurting us. I keep coming back. For some reason, Bill, the United States is such a funny country. We're such a weird country in some ways, Bill, because I keep thinking about that one little cartoon that in the comic strip Pogo. You know who Pogo is, right?
Yes.
The possum?
Yeah.
You know, the wise possum, Pogo. You know, if you've seen that, the one I'm talking about, you know what I mean. He's standing there and he's looking out over, you know, he's surveying all that's in front of him, and he says, "We have seen the enemy, and he is us."
Right.
You know,
I've seen that one.
Yeah. When I look at, and I think he was looking at the pollution. I think he was looking at the cans and the litter and stuff like that. But when I think about how hard we make it, sometimes some people make it on our government, for example, to fight the war on terror. When I think about how hard, I mean, some of these things are good. Some of these things are good things that makes us who we are. But I'll tell you, it's tough. It's tough sometimes in this country making anything happen. When I think about the need for us to be energy independent, think about where global geopolitics would be today if the United States was energy independent. Think about how that would change.
It would change our entire outlook towards the Middle East.
It would change everything in them, exactly. And so, but we are dependent upon oil. It's the oxygen of the marketplace. We can do something about that over time. It's not going to happen quickly. In the meantime, why not use the resources that we have? Why not become more energy independent?
Well, that's exactly what the Chamber's philosophy is. I don't know that we'll ever be energy independent, but what we need to recognize is that oil and gas and coal are going to be around for a long time. I mean, they are our energy
generations.
Supplies. And we need to use them, and we need to understand that going out 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we're going to have to move to a carbonless-based society. And that's fine, but we need to understand that we can't destroy our economics by doing things that are stupid, such as cutting off oil and gas exploration. And let me just give you one statistic. We have the highest natural gas prices in the world. If you want to talk about what affects small business, it's the price of natural gas that's used for manufacturing. In the United States, it runs about $8.85 per million BTUs. Then Canada, it's a little bit closer. But when you get to the other industrialized nations, Japan is $6.05, China is $5.05, India is $3.10. And so they're almost a third of what we are. So when we wonder where jobs go, these other countries are much more competitive. And the reason why I picked on natural gas...
It's not just wages, is it?
It's not just wages. It's government regulation. It's the NIMBY philosophy, not in my backyard.
Right.
I mean, if you're building an energy project in China, you're building an energy project in China. And, you know, the government right now is planning to do, I believe, 80-some more power plants, huge power plants. In the United States, if we can do a few, we're really happy.
Well, and the thing is, and you know, clearly, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that China's not going to be as energy conscious. I mean, I'm sorry, environmentally conscious as we want to be here in the United States. And good for the United States for being more that way. But the thing is, we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can do both, can't we? We can have energy production. We can have energy, the raw material, harvesting of the raw materials. We can have all that and have the environmental safety, can't we?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at where we are, our environmental record, we're one of the cleanest countries in the world. Even when all of the ratings come internationally, we're always in the top 10 or 12, and the countries that are ahead of us are always much smaller countries than we are. So for a large, massive industrial country, we are clean. Every one of our hazardous air pollutants has dropped dramatically over the last 30 years while our gross domestic product has gone up. And let me give you one startling thing before we hit another issue, and that is it's called international air pollution. And one of the things that happens is when something goes in the air, the winds happen to take it.
That's right.
And so right now, 40% of the pollution that they're taking out of California comes from China.
I believe it. Oh, yeah, I believe it, because China is very – I mean, they've got the brown cloud thing going over there in the Pacific, don't they?
Yes.
That's something a lot of people don't know about.
And that brown cloud dumps, particulate matter, it dumps mercury, it dumps CO2, it dumps all of this.
Yeah.
And so we're imposing more stringent environmental laws on ourselves all the time. And what we're doing is we're cleaning up the air from China or India or Africa.
Well, we need to say happy birthday to Europe, don't we?
Because
we're sending less to them than we used to. So we Europe needs to be paying us, I think, for sending them cleaner air than they used to. Hang on to that thought, Bill. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, I'm going to ask Bill what his thoughts and the Chamber's thoughts are on the global warming issue. And we're going to do that right after these messages. Also, I'm going to ask him, we're going to go back to that vote he was talking about. That's the first thing I'm going to ask him about is, what are the chances of getting something through Congress that would allow us to drill for the oil that we actually possess? Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with Bill Kovacs. He's Vice President of Environment, Technology, and Regulatory Affairs at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And that's uschamber.com, right, Bill?
Yes, it is.
And I hope you check that out. Now, have you got an energy policy posted there that we can find?
We have more energy policy than you'll ever want to see. I would say that energy is up with our top four or five issues and will remain there for a long time. I mean, after all, the entire country runs on energy. If we don't have energy, we don't run our computers, our factories, our cars, or anything else.
Well, and so check that out, folks, at uschamber.com. Bill, you mentioned a vote a minute ago in the House. As quickly as you can, are you saying that there is legislation being proposed in front of Congress, in Congress right now, that would allow us to vote to drill offshore on the Eastern Seaboard, on the coastal areas, as maybe as well as Anwar?
Yes. Well, this didn't involve Anwar, but they had passed Anwar a few weeks ago. But the House of Representatives yesterday passed a bill by 232 to 187 to allow drilling to begin 50 miles offshore.
Okay.
And it would be done on a state-by-state basis. And the states that participate, believe it or not, would actually get royalties.
Sharing the revenue. All right. I like that.
And you know, the environmentalists and those who are opposed to drilling saying we're going to destroy the environment are saying we're trying to bribe everyone. Well, if the states are willing to allow drilling and we're able to get more oil and gas out of there, why shouldn't they receive a benefit?
Absolutely. Well, let's move to the Senate. Is that where we're going to be stuck?
That's it. That's where you're going to get stuck. Everything dies in the Senate. Front page of the business section today, Senator Nelson of Florida has already said he's going to lead a filibuster against it. And it's not that he's just leading a filibuster against Florida. You got to keep that in mind, because Florida could opt out and do nothing. They could they could prohibit oil and gas. He wants to lead a filibuster so that no other state can get the royalties, that no other state can have drilling, that no other state is allowed to explore for oil and gas, even if it's in their best interest.
When,
you can't have one state running the entire country.
When Ozzie Smith played for St. Louis shortstop, they said that that was where base hits went to die. and now we know that the Senate is where good legislation goes to die.
It is,
and like small business health plans, and things like that. It's just amazing. We got to fix that, folks. Think about that when you go to the polls this fall. Okay, Bill, let's move over to global warming. I made this statement in on the show, and I've written it in a column. I believe that global warming is real. I believe the Earth is warming. It's been warming for the last 10,000 years. Kentucky used to be under a sheet of ice, and three elephants roamed there. I do believe that, but I also believe that Kyoto and those types of constructs is junk policy. What do you think?
We would completely agree with you. I'm agreeing too much. You're absolutely right, because the mandates don't work, and that's the problem with Kyoto. What they want to do is limit our ability to use energy before we've even developed the technology to even capture CO2. For example, if you impose Kyoto today, something people don't understand, what would happen when everyone woke up tomorrow is we would have a limit on the amount of energy that we could use.
Back to 1990 levels.
At 1990 levels. So everyone in this country would have to look at the cars they drive, the homes they're living in, and decide, okay, we're all moving backwards to whatever we had in 1990. And the second thing is, it would then all cost anyone who wanted to use the additional energy, it would cost them more money, because there would be a cap and trade system. And that system, just so everyone understands, would be imposed in a framework where we don't even have the technology to remove the CO2 from the atmosphere. There is no technology.
Folks,
Bill,
it's this simple as far as I'm concerned. Kyoto is not about cleaning up the earth and fixing global warming. Kyoto was more about how do we make the United States less competitive in the global marketplace.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that, Bill?
No, you're absolutely right. I'd go one step further. It's really about deindustrializing the United States and taking us back to a society that's almost, you know, people chasing bunnies so they can.
Ironically, though, these are the same people who are mad at the Bush administration or anybody who lets jobs go overseas.
Well, if you want jobs to go overseas, you sign on to the Kyoto Protocol, because at that point in time, the only countries that are competitive are China, India, Mexico, and the rest of the
world. Which, by the way, most of those countries he just mentioned aren't even subject to Kyoto if everybody signed to Kyoto. Hey, Bill, thank you for being here. Very illuminating information. Will you come back another time?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Bill Kovacs, ladies and gentlemen, with the U.S. Chamber. Have a good holiday, Bill. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, but I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.